No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. We have a very interesting guest tonight with us tonight, Anthony Ford. Mr. Ford is the author of What Have We Done? A collection of essays on the state of America. He lives in Texas and is a member of the Conservative Party, which he believes is the only hope for America. We, of course, want to know what you think, so please call in with your questions. Again, at 888-628-6008 or Skype us. Before I go any further, however, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, who has now gone from Kansas back to Washington. Very mysteriously, I might add. But by the way, if the witness protection program, if those people are listening, this is not the Kathleen Gomez you are looking for. Okay, I used to Jedi mind trick there to you know, because I got your back, Kathleen.
Yeah, you got my back, and you got protect me from Bahrain, the guy down on the border who's going after me, and everyone I know, the drug cartels. Anyway,
well, he won't be able to catch up with you.
You know, because I'm in Washington.
You're moving too fast.
Exactly.
Before Kathleen introduces our guest, let me shout out to the five new members of Congress. They're not new members of Congress, but they're new to signing on as co-sponsors to the New Columbia Admission Act, or as we affectionately call it, the D.C. Statehood Bill. They are Grace Meng, New York 6th District, our old friend Rosa DeLauria from Connecticut's 3rd, Robert Bradley, Pennsylvania, 1st District, Scott Peters, California, District 52, and Mark DeSaliner, California 11. Kathleen, would you like to hazard a guess at what all these people have in common?
Unfortunately, they're not independents, and they're not Republicans. They are all Democrats.
They're all Democrats. 115 Democrats. Come on, Republicans, let's get somebody to step up to the plate.
Well, on that note, let me introduce our guest for the evening. This is Anthony Ford, and we're really excited to speak with you. You have gone basically from a liberal background to a conservative philosophy, or your platform or your beliefs are conservative now. And I find that really interesting because I do think that there's common ground that both the far right, far left, or whatever you call the conservative, the liberal, has some place in the middle that we can meet. So it's always exciting to talk to somebody who is from that conservative, from the kind of, I guess, the right side of the political scepter. And with that, I'd like to introduce Mr. Ford. Mr. Ford, thank you for coming to the show. How are you?
Well, Kathleen, I want to thank you and Senator for allowing me to be on your program. And thank you for the gracious introduction, even though I'm in Democrat territory.
Oh, that's all right.
Exactly.
We like Republicans.
We don't skip. We're pretty easygoing. And I, And I'm independent, so, you know, I'm kind of like I'm open to both sides. And Senator Brown would say that I've become a redneck since I moved out to Arizona, but I just think I see both sides pretty well. So okay. So go ahead, Michael. Why don't you ask the first question?
Well, you know what, Mr. Ford, I'd like you to tell me, if you can, what the Conservative Party actually is. We deal with Republicans and Democrats basically here in the district, and we certainly have had people from other parties, from the Green Party, from the Libertarian Party. But what is the Conservative Party?
Well, I think nowadays, if you base it on, I tend to think what a Barry Goldwater or even Ronald Reagan have described as the Conservative Party, it is a party that allows individuals to really I guess you can say independently live their lives with as little of government intrusion as possible. Not to say that the government doesn't have its place. Yes, it does have its place in certain areas and certain arenas, but by and large, we feel that the government primarily should do what it's supposed to do, defend the nation as a whole, build roads and bridges and the like. But when it gets into the cultural, the moral, and the spiritual areas of life, we feel that the government is way, way overbound. And at this point, I think it's extreme. And if you just look at areas where I think we should have a more conservative approach, if you take one aspect of American culture, our children. Right now, today, we have children killing one another. We have children that are literally being bullied to death. We have children that are taking their own babies and putting them in microwaves. I mean, it's to the extreme. And I do believe, now, and you know what, we got to realize, we're all Americans, but I do believe, collectively, you can't necessarily say, well, it's the liberal Democrats or the conservative Republicans who've done this, but I think collectively we have failed as people and politicians to really address the issues of this nation across the board. I mean, just read our newspapers and the like, and it's sad, the decline that we've made culturally, morally, and spiritually.
Well, I don't disagree with a lot of that, but but it sounds to me, the way you've laid it out, it sounds to me that like you're a libertarian. Is there a difference? Am I not getting something here? Is there a difference between the way libertarians feel about things, non-intrusion of government, stay out of the social stuff, limited government? Is there something different between conservatives and libertarians, or are you guys very close to each other?
Well, as I said, a libertarian, I'm not thinking about the original Paul Rand or his father. That is too.
Right.
That is different. It's different. The libertarians would have a tendency, well, if you want to smoke pot, do whatever you want to do, do it. Well, the government shouldn't have anything to say to do it. Even if you want to have, assisted suicide, no problem. But what conservative is not, we're not, I wouldn't even say that extreme, because to some that's not extreme. I don't believe in laissez-faire to the extent that the government doesn't do anything. I think that's, anarchy. We can't do that. I just think that the Conservative Party does stand for limited government in many, many areas. We do believe that the American people have the wherewithal, the intelligence, and the ability to do things for themselves without government intrusion, because once a government gets into your system, you know, it's hard to get them out. I mean, let's face it, Woodrow Wilson created the income tax for the primary purpose of funding World War One. We still have the income tax today. And I just think that we have so many laws now. Many of them are prohibiting Americans from being competitive on a world stage, and many of the other regulations that we have are just causing our businesses to slow down. And in a strange sort of way, we have taken a lot of incentive from American people to work. To really work. Why? Because you can practically live in, I'm sure we all know this, and I did studies before coming on, you can live now in this country without working. You have every, and it's not necessarily bad, but it says that when a person says, well, I don't have to work, or I don't have to have a father to raise my children, or I don't have to, you know, do anything to support myself, that is not good.
Well, I do have to ask you one question that I find I have issues with Republicans. I do feel that there's a lot of things that government are getting involved in, and they do tend to create a bureaucracy that's very, you know, it's difficult for an individual small business owners, per se, to be able to deal. Like, if you're a landscaper, I mean, I have a friend that's a landscaper, and I'm amazed at all the bureaucracy that really keeps him from growing and being what he wants. But then, at the same time, I know that if you're conservative, you probably are pro-life. Would that be a correct statement?
Absolutely.
Okay. So when you say that government should not get involved, it seems to me that the Republicans make, and the conservatives, make this next step of, I don't want government in my business. I don't want him, them telling me how to run my business. But then you feel that you want to bring that into some social issues, like whether or not a woman has a right to decide for herself what to do with her pregnancy. Now, I don't believe that, abortion should be used as a contraceptive method, but there are instances where that is the best interest for the mother. And I guess that's what I have a problem, is because it seems like when it comes to what you guys believe, maybe religiously, then it's okay to get involved in people's lives. So, that's my problem when I have with conservatives.
And Kathleen, you make an excellent point. I'm not going to belittle that at all. That is an excellent point. And I'll answer that in this way. At one time in this country, slavery was legal. At one time in this country, women could not vote. And the laws changed that to make it correct, not even fair, correct what it's supposed to be. The reason they did that because African Americans had no voice. They had no way to adjust the system because the system said you are a slave, you have no rights, you cannot land, you can't do anything. Therefore, the government had to step in and make it correct. With a child has no one to speak for them. The child has no one to say, well, you know, I would like to live, but the mother, for any reason, even in trimester, can say, well, I don't want this child. And this is where I'm going to be the conservative. A lot of this is irresponsibility. Today, we have more birth controls, condoms, and everything else that can prevent pregnancies. But instead, we have individuals who don't care and they think, well, if I have a baby, I'll just go get an abortion. Or if I have a baby, I'll just get on welfare. And that mentality is not good because we have generations. I'm an African-American male, and we have generations of African-Americans who only know welfare. I know women who have not one abortion, two, three, four. I mean, and so why don't you just my boyfriend doesn't like to use condoms. That's a real good excuse for committing murder.
Well, you know what? This is. I don't want to get stuck on this issue because
I agree.
Because liberals and conservatives have been in an impasse for a long time. But part of the problem I have with conservatives is the thing you said about condoms and other birth control methods. Yes, that's absolutely true. But you know, we've got conservatives on the other hand trying to keep sex education out of schools, trying to keep us from distributing condoms, and that's one of the problems sometimes I have with conservatives is that they really, you know, I had a young woman say to me one time when I was campaigning for a Democratic presidential candidate in Minnesota, you're pro-abortion and that's why I won't vote for you. And I said to her, don't be ridiculous. Nobody wants to see more abortions, but we're pro-choice, and that's a little different. But the point is, why do conservatives stand against things like sex education?
Well, you know what, Senator? I'm going to say this. We conservatives cannot stick our head in the sand and pretend that there's not like sex being bombarded into society every which way, billboards, magazines, newspapers, music. Sex education, I have to agree with you. We should have, maybe 20, 30 years ago, you didn't have to because the nation wasn't sexually saturated. Today, it is. From everything from your Miley Cyrus and everybody else, today we should have some form of sex education just to give children a balanced perspective, just like I agree with the Democrats. We should have had some form of national health care prior to what President Obama has put forth. I thought it was extreme when we only had, general statistics says there were 38 million Americans, basically construction workers, waitresses, and the like, who needed health care. But instead of having a program that covered everybody, everything, the Republicans should have, and I'll say this, the Republicans should have spearheaded that. We had 8 years in the White House. We had the House and the Senate, just like we did now. We didn't do it. And then when the Democrats did it, we get mad. Oh, we don't like your program. Well, you know what? We had the opportunity. On that one, I'm not going to – I agree with you. We should have some form of sex education in the education system, and we should have had some form of health care system. Extreme – I'm the type of conservative that thinks the whole civil rights – era, to me, I think it went too far. I think it should have stopped at voting rights. Why? Because now when you had affirmative action and Title IX and everything else, you have many of my white friends who says, you know what, I cannot get the job I want because it has to be affirmative to you. And then you have black guys saying, well, I don't know whether they want me because I'm educated or just because I'm black. You've created a whole mass of confusion and a backlash for something that all you had to do, like all the other races that came to this country, is give pure voting rights. We would have voted for people like us or people who represented us the same way the Italians, the Germans, and the Swedes did. But no, as usual, with all due respect, Senator, the Democrats took it too far, and they had affirmative action and all these other programs. And I come from a family who worked for Eleanor Roosevelt. In my family, when I was growing up, Robert Kennedy came to the House. Shirley Chisholm, Congressman Fred Richmond. My father was instrumental in helping these people get elected. He thought I was begun to be a Democratic. We had problems, and we exchanged. But my thing is that I think they went too far. The Democrats meant well, but they went so far that now we have whole generations of African Americans that don't know what it is to work, that don't know what has self-esteem. And I think they didn't intend for that, the program. But Senator Daniel Moynihan said many, many years ago, the program that we're putting forth now, we're going to suffer for these programs 20, 30 years down the line. And he was right.
Well, you know what? First of all, I agree with you that Democrats have made some mistakes, and I certainly agree with you that our Achilles heel is that we think we know what we're doing better than everybody else. You know, I've said that since the first day I became a Democrat. We talk down to America. We say, you know, you don't really want a gun. You're just not smart enough to realize it, and we'll explain to you why you don't want it. And I really think that we suffer in that way. And I also got to tell you, you're quickly becoming one of my most favorite conservatives because, you know, I really think that this is not the kind of answers you're giving are not what I'm expecting from a conservative. I think that, and I think this is what Kathleen started the show with, that there's a middle ground where we can meet, and that's what we hope for, and I certainly see that here. Kathleen, you got something you want to say?
Yes, I'm sorry, I got dropped somehow. I don't know how that happened, but I came on while you're saying, actually, that you find some common ground with Mr. Ford? Because you are a true liberal Democrat. I mean, you, like, stand on that platform pretty strong and you know, solid. So when I came to that...
Some of that is just to annoy you, but...
I must say, Senator, your last remark, which you said about the Democrats, you are fast becoming a favorite of mine. I've never heard a liberal Democrat speak with such honesty and integrity as you just said. We know it all, and when we talk down to them, and I got to admit, that is refreshing, and I thank you for saying that, Senator. I really appreciate
that.
Well,
and we do it all the time, and it kills me because, you know, I always try to remember that there are many important people in my life, because I came from a working class background, that are conservative and Republican, and I don't agree with them on a lot of things, but I love them, and they're good, honest people that care about America. And it annoys me when I hear liberals say, you know, it's not about the money, which is easy because they've got the money. Or it's not about the, you know, this or that, and they talk down to people. And yeah, I really think we do that on the gun issue. I wish we could come to some common ground on guns. But, you know, just as I dislike what the right does sometimes, I feel equally the same about the left. So I think you make a great point.
That is refreshing to hear. And I must say this, on the guns, I do believe that, and it's not so much the Democrats, even the conservatives on this one, but I do believe that the Second Amendment, as was properly explained to me, was not so much that we can go hunting and get food, hunt rabbits and bears. As you probably know, Senator, it was in the event that we had a tyrannical government in place that Americans would be able to defend themselves from a tyrannical government. And I do believe in the right, you probably know this as a conservative, I believe in the right to bear arms, not machine guns and tanks and all this foolishness, but the basic right, you know, to bear arms to protect house and property. I think there's nothing wrong with that, and that we should allow that. But, you know, that, like you said, that's an issue, like the abortion issue. I don't know if it's ever going to be resolved, and that's where I come, listen, we're Americans. Well, we may have to agree to disagree.
Let me ask you something. You know, I, as far as guns, we've had a, that's how Michael and I have a lot of disagreements. I mean, growing up, you know, my, and being on the Mexican border for the past 7 years and seeing what happens there, you really do, especially if you're isolated in the ranch, you really need to be able to protect yourself. But right. Do you have a feeling that so many Republicans that I come across with, and this includes my sister, I don't think she's a Republican, but this fear of, well, if I register my guns, if I let, you know, the government's going to knock down my door and they're going to take everything from me. Because conservatives tend to have such a distrust of the government and what they're going to do to you. I don't feel that way about government, but it seems that's what I get from a lot of conservatives and a lot of Republicans in the state of Arizona. What do you say about that?
I think that the fear of the government is not alarmist. It is, I think it's actually, it's true. Unfortunately, just not too long ago, 6 months ago, the NSA had to reveal they were spying on Americans. Americans, whether you were thought to be a terrorist profiled or whatever, your email calls and everything, emails, your telephone calls, were all being listened to. And I mean, that's frightening. Because now we've gotten to a point where now I understand the reasoning. All right, there are terrorists. That is no joke. And these people do not want us. These people want to kill us. Let's get real here. But the fact of the matter is, in doing this with the Homeland Security, we went so far to erode many of the rights of Americans. And most Americans don't even realize this, that many, like the Fourth Amendment, search and seizure, is practically being eviscerated. And, you know, we have done things in saying, well, safety and security and terrorism, and we've taken a lot of rights away. That's why I think conservatives are reluctant to say, well, okay, we want you to register guns, we do this, we do that, because the government has enough information on us now that they're not using, in all honesty, correctly, put it like that. It's not being used in the above manner. When you have foreign governments, allies saying, well, you know what, you spied on our prime minister, you monitored his call, that makes us, as Americans, a freedom-loving people, say, well, what are we doing? Why are we doing this? And I know the reasoning. But does the reasoning justify some of the extreme means that we're doing to other Americans as Americans?
Yeah,
absolutely. That's a good point.
Well, you know, it is scary. I think it's scary to all of us. And it's not just the government. It's business, too. You know, when I go online to get medication for my diabetes or to get some information about my diabetes. And the next day I get 100 emails about, you know, blood testing meters and different types of drugs. And, you know, it's like, how do all these people, everybody in the world knows I have diabetes? So
that is so amazing.
Yeah, it's a little scary.
I totally agree with you. I did a medical search for a medical situation I was incurring, and boy, the next day I said, how did they know this? They knew everything and how old you were and everything like this, and it was scary because I'm saying, my gosh, this is America. But you know what? It's a point to me and I'm not blaming this on Democrats or Republicans, because this is like a government within a government. I'm not one of these conspiracy nuts, but I'm saying the government said itself, well, the NSA did go too far. We didn't authorize this. I'm saying, well, you're the president of the United States. How did they get this done? You know, and it was scary to know that you can Google anything, and they have a profile of you. What you like, right. What you don't like, or whatever. And that's, I get coupons for everything I buy now from the local grocery store here. Right. I get the coupons for what I buy. And I'm saying, it's not convenient to me. It's intrusive.
Yeah, I agree with you.
You're right. You're right. Go ahead, Michael.
I'm just going to say, to get back to Kathleen's point, again, I think it shows that we have much in, although we may not have certain things in common, we have much in common. I think that what you just expressed it would be a typical response from an American. I think we all worry about it.
Well, you know, you should also turn your cameras off, they say, and your computers, because they can see you through the camera. So, you know, it is true, I guess. And I guess I've never seen that point that you brought, that they're misusing it and probably just registering your guns. They probably, I guess, is it really, if you purchase a gun in the United States, I would think they'd have some way of trying, unless I guess you do it in the legal market. But you moved from New York to Houston, Texas. Is that correct?
Yeah, I live in Texas now, not too far from Houston. I'm actually in a place called Fort Worth, Texas.
Oh, sure. I know Fort Worth. And do you find the environment there in Texas is more aligned, I guess, to your views?
Actually, yes. And I lived in New York most of my life. I was a news anchor and an anchor man in New York. And I love New York to the extent that until I left, because to the fact New York has the strictest gun laws, as you probably know, the Sullivan Law and everything else.
Right.
New York has, everybody knows where to get a gun in New York. And we have the strictest laws. Here in Texas now, we just passed open carry, where you can have your gun and just carry it outright. I mean, like the West. I have no problem with that. And I'm thinking that in Texas, where I'm at, you think twice before you go in somebody's house. You think twice before you, because you don't know that person could be armed. And most likely they are in Texas. Not that everyone carries a weapon, but most people, for their own home protection or whatever, carries their weapons with them or in their car. And there's no law against it, which is nice. I'm just thinking that, you know what, you don't have to get crazy with it, but I do think certain individuals, felons, and individuals who demonstrated a mental incapacity should not just be able to buy a gun. That doesn't make sense. And that's why I think the conservatives are too extreme. I mean, we have my friends, the NRA. I don't want any restrictions on anything, even hollow point bullets. The intention is only to go through a bulletproof vest. That makes no sense. That's extreme to me. We don't want to just say everything. I mean, I'm not a libertarian, and I do not believe that all conservatives say, let's go that far. But on the other hand, when my liberal friends say, well, every time that this is a touchy issue, but every time a black person is shot or armed by a police officer, that's the police department. No. The reality is black people do commit crime. Hello? And sometimes we are wrong. But you can't say all the time that all police are wrong, and it's all confusing now at this point. And I think because the fact that, unfortunately, the liberals try to make everything egalitarian, and you can't do that. You just can't. We have certain issues in this nation, and we've had them. They have done a lot in resolving many. The labor laws. You got to give it to the Democrats. The children are not working 80 hours a week now. You got to give it to them for that. You got to give it to them that there's certain things that we rights that we have in our ocean and things like that. Yes, but on the other hand, a business can't practically operate in this country because there's so much rules and regulations. It's amazing to me.
I keep wanting to find something to disagree with you about. As a conservative, you know, as a liberal, I'm looking for something to disagree with you about, but I'm having a hard time because, again, I agree with you, and you know, it's both sides. It's not doing background checks and armor piercing bullets, but it's also the kid in Virginia who got expelled from school because he made his finger look like a gun in the third grade and pointed his finger at somebody. I mean, both sides are extreme, and we got to find a way to get to the middle.
I'm listening to you, Senator, and I'm saying to myself in my heart, this senator sounds like a moderate Republican.
It just gets crazy sometimes, you know. We were talking about this the other day with somebody that wanted to bring sexual harassment against a third grade boy who kissed a third grade girl. I mean, it's just crazy.
I agree. It's gotten so far that it's extreme, and I think it's unhealthy for America. It's practically toxic. To use the example that you said, and in certain parts of this country, which is shameful, you cannot even say Merry Christmas in the holiday season. You have to say holidays. This is ridiculous now. It's as if we don't have enough real issues that we have to make up these ridiculous little laws. Well, we don't really want you to say Merry Christmas. Say Happy Holidays. Give me a break.
Exactly. Well, you know what? We're going to take a little bit of break to get everybody to catch their breath. We're going to take a little break, and we're going to play a song by Carole King called Going Back, which is an old favorite of mine, and it talks about a desire to return to a simpler time in life, and I think that would be great for all of us, and we'll be back. We hope that our guests will stay with us for the second half of the show, but we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Thanks.
I think I'm going back to the things I learned so well in my youth. I think I'm returning to the days when I was young enough to know the truth.
And we're back. I hope you enjoyed that. But we're back with our guest, Anthony Ford. And Mr. Ford, I'd like to ask you a little bit about your background. You were a musician, and I have a lot of friends that are musicians. I love music. Unfortunately, I'm totally inept at it. But tell us a little bit about your music career and how it started and ended.
As a matter of fact, I had what they call today attention deficit disorder, but they did not give me Ritalin. In those days, they said, he's hyper, so they gave me a language. They gave me French, and then they gave me German. Then they said, well, that's not slowing him down. So they gave me music, and they said, pick an instrument. I picked the bass. I liked it. It was big and everything. That slowed me down, and it also changed my life dramatically. I became a classical bassist, and then I went to, at that time, to a rock band, and we were very successful, believe it or not. But as I said, it was the 60s, and we didn't exactly, we had a mix of drugs and whatever, and we missed about our own opportunities. But at that time, we had gotten so far to be on Johnny Carson, with Seat, you know, you sit down and talk with him. Wow. We also had opened up for John Lennon, Chicago, Aretha Franklin, James Brown. I can name them. And the thing I remember at most of these shows was that everybody was high. I'm not kidding you. It was weird.
No. I mean, you know, I was on the other side of the bass in those days. I was sitting out in the audience. And
the audience was high.
Just to be honest about it.
It was a big cloud over the stadium. I'm telling you, and it wasn't a cloud, but it was a big cloud over the stadium. And
Right. You can get a contact high just from sitting there in those days because, it was.
Exactly.
Just,
and I went from one extreme to another, being like a hippie and a radical and everything, and to the point that the Vietnam War was raging, and I thought in my mind, my father always thought that a young black man should join the service. My mother was against it. So I joined during the Vietnam War because I felt I had to do something. And, you know, he gave me, at that time, the platforms of both parties, the Democrat and the Republican platforms. I voted for Nixon. My father did not like it. We were estranged for nearly 20 years. And then I went into broadcasting, became a newscaster. And that's hence the book. And I got to tell you guys this because it's the most amazing thing. On September 11th, I used to go into, I was an anchor, news anchor at a station called WFME, then longer around, and I would sit in the bottom of the World Trade Center, not the bottom, the lobby, and I would read the newspapers. I would get up at about 3 in the morning because I was morning drive, so I would work from about 6 to 9, and I was out of there by about, 8:45 and down. And this particular morning, when I got up to go at my usual 3:30 in the morning, the voice said, don't go. It wasn't a scary voice or nothing. It was just very authoritative. At that time, I was a believer, but very marginally, if you know what I mean. I wasn't like Christian, but right, really. And that one day that I did not go to work was September 11, 2001. And I would have been under the World Trade Center when it came down reading my newspaper. I would have been in there about 9:02. I got serious with Jesus Christ at that time. And then it was like a whole series of things. I wind up leaving New York. And my fiance then, who lived in Texas, said, why don't you come to Texas? I said, Texas is nothing. It's all backwoods and rednecks and everything. I'm not going down there. And I came down here, and it was the greatest move I made. It was in core with what I naturally felt and believed in. Hence the book, What Have We Done? And as we were talking in the break, the name of the book is What Have We Done? And it was originally under my name, Anthony Ford. I'm sorry, under my name, Anthony Ford. But what happened was I got so much flack. I mean, really negative flack. My wife was the administrator. She got negative emails, threatening emails. So my publisher said, you might want to go under a different name. So I went under Mark Howard. The book is now What Have We Done by Mark Howard. And it's not an expensive book. As a matter of fact, it's $2.99 on Amazon.com. But the point was I received flack from conservatives and liberal Democrats and Republicans because the book is not just slamming, which I think the Republican Party does to its own detriment. We slam Democrat, liberal, no matter what, we're going to disagree with them. No matter what, we're going to disagree with them. And that is not good politics or good government. You just cannot disagree with a person. It's like saying, well, I'm disagreeing with him because he's black or white. You're a liberal Democrat, I disagree with you. Now, I've listened to you, and you remind me of the Kennedy era, the Trumans. These guys were Democrats, but you would never believe it by today's standard. They had practical common sense. We tend to forget that it was Harry S. Truman who dropped the bomb. And you sound like a reasoned, well, that's why I said this guy would be a moderate Republican if things were different. Because as a liberal Democrat, you don't tout the same, and I know, believe, liberal Democrat, you don't tout that same, you know, that everything is like everything, and we used to call them limousine liberals. You don't sound like that. And I'm saying, gee, really? But you are. And it's refreshing to hear that today.
Well, I got to tell you that a couple of things. One is that I really try to model a little bit after what President Kennedy did, which was to try to, and our show tries to do this, to bring different people with different opinions. You know, they say that he loved to do that, to sit people down at a table that didn't agree with each other so they could learn. And because my dad used to say to me, you cannot learn anything from somebody that agrees with you. You can reinforce a belief that you have, but if you want to learn something new, you need to talk to somebody with a different opinion because they'll give you a different perspective. So that's certainly true. And the other thing you say is right on. So many times we stand before a group of people and try to pick the politically correct things to say rather than to tell the truth, and that's wrong.
Amen. And now I don't know, and I think many people don't know where politicians really stand, because exactly what you said, we check the polls and then we say this.
Right.
We don't speak from our heart. And I think when you hear a politician that speaks from his heart, it perks up our ears. We say, you know, I really like that guy. I really, you know, I can respect that guy or gal, whoever, because they're speaking from their heart. It's not a bunch of polls and a bunch of advisors, a bunch of people says, well, say this to this audience, say that to that audience. And then by the time the person gets to the elected position, they don't know who they are any longer. The people don't know who they are. And we have the result of what we call now gridlock. And that's inside the Republican Party. We own both the Senate and the Congress, and we have inside problems in our own party. Now, go figure.
Well, you know, it's interesting because in Arizona, you know, it's also a very conservative state. Basically, the state is run by Phoenix. A lot of trans people who never grew up there don't know where the Grand Canyon or any of the rural areas are. But one of the state legislators, he was a Republican, and he felt in his conscience that he had to expand the role of Medicare for the state, that he wanted older people because they had actually decided not to offer some kind of insurance, health insurance, to seniors or anybody who didn't have kids. If you had kids, you could get on it. If you didn't, well, that's bad. You didn't have insurance. He voted in his conscience that they should expand the roles to include older, you know, people without children. And they said to him, you've gone against what we believe in. We're getting you out. And he was voted out for just, you know, doing what he felt was right. And I guess that's what I think has happened to maybe both parties, is that, boy, in those primaries, if you don't do exactly as they say and tell, you know, say this is what I'm going to vote for all the time, they will come back and they'll remove you from your office. And that's a terrible way to do politics.
You're absolutely correct, and I can verify this, that when I ran for Congress, I was backed by Mayor Ed Koch, nice guy, and the chairman of the Republican Party, George Clark, at that time. And he told me, he said, you can beat the guy, and the congressman, I knew I could beat this guy. And my father helped him get elected. But the fact of the matter was, they sat at the meeting, and they said, here's what we want you to do. We want you to say you're for capital punishment. At that time, I was not for capital punishment. I said, I don't think it's applied in an egalitarian manner. It's not fair. And I went on with a whole litany thing. And Mayor Koch said, just say you're for capital punishment. And then when you get in office, you govern the way you want to govern. But I couldn't do it at that time. I think I know better now, or worse, I don't know. But the fact is, they said they couldn't support me because of that one point. The Conservative Party is very strong on capital punishment, no matter what. And I just said, I can't go with that. And they pulled their endorsement. But it, to me, it's too rigid. I mean, God forbid if the state executes someone who was innocent. And unfortunately, we did that here in Texas. And so I just can't go with that. But call me liberal Democrat in that area, I can't go with that.
And that's one of those things that's very, very in your party. I mean, the Conservative platform. They do believe in capital punishment. And I think that that's what people have to do, because what we were just talking on break, you know, and I've always said this to the listeners, that when I was working on the Hill, I worked for pretty progressive Democrats. But the one thing that I had in common with my friends of my age who worked for pretty, you know, hardcore Republicans is that we liked alternative music. And so we would break together and go out together. And we knew we weren't going to change each other's minds, but we had respect bell for each other to be able to talk and realize that we weren't, she wasn't a monster, I wasn't a monster, they weren't monsters. And now it's like, boy, you know, there's nothing in between. There's no moderation. If you don't think like this, this liberal or this conservative, then, you know, you can't be friends. They don't want to talk to you. I mean, they don't even bread together on the Hill. So, you know, this is a real problem. I think it's the people like you and like me and like the senator that have to really start saying enough is enough.
And I must admit, well, when the senator said, okay, I'm a liberal Democrat, and I went to his website, I said, oh, this is not going to go good. But after listening to the senator saying, you know what, he's reasonable. He's a liberal Democrat. There's nothing wrong, man. He's, you know, it's nice to hear. Now I can go tell my friends, you know, they're not all that bad. You know, they're not really that bad. You know, and then they're going to say, you're turning. I know how my conservative friends are. They say, it's like if you give them an inch, you know, and so I don't know. But
and that's really what we're trying to do here is to say, look, we have a lot more in common than you think we do. And we have a caller on line three. Taboo, who's a regular caller to the show. We haven't heard from him in a long time.
Taboo, my favorite.
Are you there, Taboo?
Well, yes, I am. And hello.
Hey, how are you?
Okay. Nice.
Do you have a question?
Yes, I
or
do.
Or comment?
For your guest.
I'm sorry, we're having
Lord,
a hard time.
If you will. Hello?
Yeah, okay, Taboo, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, I'd like for Mr. Ford to kind of give him a definition of what he feels justice is. Or the reason I'm asking, because he was speaking about, you know, the wrongs. For example, you mentioned slavery. And I was just wondering if you felt that some type of, do you feel any damage was done during slavery?
And thank you for calling in, sir. Absolutely, there was tremendous damage done during slavery, after slavery. But we also cannot continue to blame every white person or whatever for the things that happened in slavery. And we, as a people,
simply
hark back.
Right. Well, you're right. Thank you. You answered. Well, what I did really want to get at is. Right, you don't blame people. And first, I'm agreeing with you, and I really thank you for coming on. My question was, it seems as though you were against affirmative action, and I was just wondering, do you feel you should somehow repair the damages of slavery in any way?
Okay, now the reason that I was against affirmative action to the extent that it was done during the 60s and the like is because it actually caused a backlash against us, the people that it was supposed to help. I'm not saying that certain things was not done intentionally to make sure that African Americans couldn't get certain jobs and the like. True. But if everything would evolve on its course and we had the right to vote completely and totally and fully, in many parts of the South it would be all black officials, because the majority of many areas were, you know, predominantly black, let's face it. But when you put the affirmative action in place and said, well, we're going to take this black man over this white guy because of the fact he's black, even the black man is saying, well, you know, you wouldn't hire me if I wasn't, you know, do I qualify because I'm educated or talented, or am I qualifying because I'm black? Oh, just because you're black. So you're not liking this guy simply because he's white. That's believe it or not, that's another form of discrimination. And I think in certain
instances... Do you think what President Nixon did with IBM was wrong?
Well, put it like this. We tend to malign President Nixon, who I voted for, and I tend to think that we forget. It wasn't necessarily wrong, but if we forget that it was President Nixon who started the food stamp programs, it was President Nixon who at that time appointed more black federal judges than any president, Republican or Democrat, up to that time. It was President Nixon, but he would never touted it.
Yes, he did. He put the affirmative action program with IBM, yes.
Yes, that I agree with. I'm saying that also we forget other things that President Nixon had did, but he just didn't, like I said, advertise it to the extent, because he was a Republican now. Republicans, we're not supposed to look, the secret is we're not supposed to look like we're all that much for civil rights to the extent that we was. We do know that without the Republicans, the whole civil rights program would not have passed, because many of the Democrats, who were Dixiecrats, voted against it.
Well, and you know what? I got to say that to you too, Tabu, is that I go out and I talk to young people all the time. And, you know, I'm a proud Democrat, but I also realize that the people that were keeping African-American children from getting a equal education in the South were Democrats. They weren't Republicans. And you know, when you tell young people that Martin Luther King Jr. was a Republican, most of them don't believe. Yeah, they go, no. He was a Democrat. No. He was a Republican, as many African-Americans were of his time, simply based on what Democrats did to them. So, you know, we all have to take a little responsibility for it, too. I'm a believer in affirmative action, by the way. But we all have to take some responsibility for what happened.
Liberals, and let me bring this as affirmative action, and I have to side with Mr. Ford. When I graduated from American University with a degree in international service, my dream was to work in Spain. That's where I wanted to end up. And I had a interview because of my family or whatever, I'm trying to remember. But I had an interview with a gentleman who I think I want to say his name was Mr. Castro, but it, you know, not the Castro from Arizona or whatever. But anyway, he interviewed me and he said, "You know what? You're perfect." He says, "You don't look Hispanic. You could pass for a white person. You have a Hispanic name, and you're a woman. So you're a woman who's Hispanic but doesn't look Hispanic. This is great." He goes, "You don't even have to take the test." And I sat there, and I had my whole thing was take the test, take the Foreign Service test to be able to be equal than as everyone else. And you know, I didn't do it because I felt that it didn't matter who I was or what I knew. I was just kind of. I was the perfect model for what they wanted because they could, it would meet their affirmative action requirements. And so I agree with you, Mr. Ford. I can see where that affirmative action made me feel less of an intelligent, less of a person who had the ability to do the job. They were just giving it to me because I filled a whole lot of quotas that they were surprised that, you know, they could have somebody who was as black and didn't look it. That was even better.
True.
So
that,
I don't know.
Well,
you know?
Wow. I've seen that happen so many times. You're right. You're absolutely right. And it, you know, I'm a product of that also. During the 70s, they wanted black journalists in the 60s to cover the civil rights and everything else like that. And they said, "You're articulate. You're intelligent. You got the job." And I got the job based on that. That I was a black man. I mean, at that time, I was hungry to be a broadcaster, so it didn't matter to me. But when I think back, that wasn't the greatest reason to become a broadcaster. It wasn't because I had any, you know, journalistic skills, which I did have. They didn't even check those. It was just that we needed a black reporter at this point in time. You're it. You've got the job, and that was. And I ran with it. But I've always felt that there were other white guys who really had other credentials far beyond me, who should have also at least been in the running.
And Tabu, are you still with us? Yeah, please.
Yes, I am. Could I ask Mr. Ford one other question?
Sure.
Mr. Ford, just wondering, you used the term, you know, African-American. I was just wondering how you felt. Is there a difference from the American black who's been here all along, you know, when the country started, and an African who comes here and become Americanized? And is that original American or the black American or the ex-Negro, is he not a mix? He got white members in his family, Native American as well?
That's
if so,
true.
Then is there a difference in the African American and the black American?
Well, what I found, and I'm only being politically correct by saying African American, I do not agree with hyphen American at all. I'm being respectful to the program here, but you can call me black or whatever. I don't really care about that. I think that's irrelevant. I'm an American, period. And whether you call me African American, colored, Negro, or whatever, it doesn't bother me. But in answer to your question, what I have found is that black people who come to this country from other countries who have not been carried along have a much more entrepreneurial spirit. I have met West Indians who've been in this country not even a generation and own restaurants, cleaners, and stores. I've met guys that come from Guyana who owns a whole Avis chain. I said, "How did you do this? You don't even speak English." "Well, I came over here to make it. This is America." And he did it. He did exactly that. Whereas you have African Americans were born and raised there because of the systemic, not only racism, but actually the government helping them to do everything, including think that, well, you know, the white man owes me this, the white man, and that's not good, because now you don't test yourself, because you think the white man is going to give it to you. And unfortunately, and I'm not saying I'm going to exclude Michael Brown from this, many Democrats, liberals have said, well, we're going to have this great big social program, we're going to take young black men, give them $38 a week. This happened. I know this. My father headed one of the programs. They had no skills and nothing, but you got to check every week for $38 whether you showed up or not. It was wrong, and it took your character away. And now you have the same situation going on where you have many, many young black men who want to work and are able to work, but because of these social programs, they're not connected to their own work ethics. And you have black men and families who have not worked in years and years and years. And I'm not blaming anybody. I'm just saying this is a fundamental fact that we have to address in this nation, because other blacks come up from other countries, and somehow they seem to exceed. They seem to excel. And they will not tell you about racism, whatever. All this is, I came to America. They started driving cabs, and they own the company in 2 to 5 years.
Well, you know, Kathleen made the same point with people that she sees come across the border as opposed to people that have been in Arizona for a while. And I certainly, you know, I come from my mother's family who helped raise me in Newark, New Jersey. I know a place that you worked at one time, they were Italians, and they believed education, education, education. They pushed us all. And I think there is something about being first generation that makes a big difference in your motivation. Taboo, thank you so much for calling in. We're almost out of time, so we're going to let you go. And we're going to get Mr. Ford. We've got a couple minutes left. What would you like to say, Mr. Ford?
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Such a outstanding guest. Thank you, Taboo.
First, Senator, I want to just thank you, and I owe you liberal Democrats an apology. Based on what I've talked to you, I you know what? Thank you for opening my heart and my eyes to the fact that, you know, they're human beings, they're Americans, and they're not the enemy as some of my circles have classified you folks are. Because of
and we feel the same way. You know, let me just say, I feel the same way about you, and this is a problem that we have too. We've got on both sides. Where, you know, if you like 9 out of 10 things that we stand for, we don't want to have anything to do with you.
You're right. And this show, I got to tell other folks about this show, Senator. It was a pleasure being on your show, and I really appreciate you having me on it. And more or less speaking candidly, openly, like you have, so I can say it to my... You know, you got to listen to Senator Brown. He's a nice guy. He's from Washington, D.C., no less. And he's really, we don't like Washington, D.C.
Again, you know, this guy's from Texas. Wait a second.
Yeah, right.
I thought,
And I'll just say it again. The name of the book is What Have We Done? And it's under my pen name of Mark Howard. And it just...
How do we get a copy?
Matter of fact, I'm going to send you a copy directly. I already have, by the way. It's in your email. I sent you I gifted you a copy of the book.
But I want you to sell a few books, too. How do our listeners get a copy?
The copy is available at Amazon.com. It's in digital format now, but you don't need a Kindle. We're working with Amazon because they like the book to get it in hardback or soft cover, whatever they call it today, so it can get into the hands of individuals. But the reviews have been good, and now I like the fact that when I'm listening... When I listen to other liberal Democrats like yourself, and by the way, in all honesty, there have been a lot of shows, you're the first one that is this refreshing. I'm serious. You are really refreshing. Okay. It's nice to know that, well, they're not all bad. You know, they're not monsters or whatever.
It's Kathleen. She's been working on me.
Kathleen? Your independence might have to work on some of us conservatives, too.
Yeah. I think so. It is such a pleasure to have you on the yes, show, and I hope that we can have... kind of as a visitor and you know, and maybe we can talk to some of your friends, because I really think it makes me feel better knowing that, you know, the two sides are not such monsters. They can actually come and talk together. And then the rest of us, you know, the people who are looking for, I have a lot of things I believe in the Conservative Party and the Liberal Party. And I think we can learn to come to some kind of agreement, give up a little bit of, you know, each side could have give a little bit so that our country can get back on course. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Senator and Kathleen. I appreciate you guys a lot. God bless you guys.
Yeah, and I hope we'll come back soon. Yes, and America, we will see you next week. Thanks for listening.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.